Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We're broadcasting live from Denver on day two of the Democratic National Convention. Last night, Senator Ted Kennedy, battling cancer but standing vigorous at the podium, made an emotional appearance in Denver. He kept the old torch burning for the party faithful.
The work begins anew. The hope rises again, and the dream lives on.
And Michelle Obama introduced her family to the world in prime time. She spoke of herself and her father and brought the big arena to its feet.
He said, "We know what fairness and justice and opportunity look like." And he urged us to believe in ourselves, to find the strength within ourselves to strive for the world as it should be. And isn't that the great American story?
Hillary Clinton speaks tonight. It's a huge moment to see if the party can come together and reconcile its inner struggles. But those struggles don't just center on big personalities or on the Obama-Clinton rivalry. And you can feel it here in Denver. Offstage, Democrats are grappling with how to define their core philosophy. Progressives want Obama to return to the party's liberal ideals. Conservative blue dogs see things differently. This battle could define an Obama administration. This hour, On Point, live from Denver on day two of the Democratic National Convention, progressives, blue dogs, and the battle for the center of the Democratic Party. You can join the conversation. Will it be happy days are here again for liberal progressives if Obama takes the White House? Are more conservative blue dogs wagging the dog of the Democratic Party? Should they? Joining me at our broadcast booth above the Great Hall of the Pepsi Center in Denver is Congressman Alan Boyd of Florida. He represents Florida's 2nd District, which includes Tallahassee. For the last 10 years, he's been a leader of the Blue Dog Coalition, a group of 47 Democratic members of the House of Representatives who advocate fiscal responsibility in the federal budgeting process. Congressman, welcome.
Thank you, Tom. I'm delighted to be here
with
you.
It's great to have you with us. Great to have you here. Also with us from Denver, Arianna Huffington, editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post. She's carrying the flag these days for progressives. Her new book is Right is Wrong, How the Lunatic Fringe Hijacked America, Shredded the Constitution, and Made Us All Less Safe, and What You Need to Know to End the Madness. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Arianna Huffington, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, we're joined by On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Jack, good to have you right there.
Hello, Tom, Arianna, and Congressman.
Congressman Boyd, first to you. You have said you will vote for Barack Obama, but you have shied away from endorsing him. Is Barack Obama too liberal for you?
Well, no, I don't think he is, and I want to clarify that by saying that I'm not really into people philosophically how liberal or conservative they are. I look more to management style and how they can lead this country and address the issues, very serious issues that we have to face, such as immigration, energy, budget deficits, which have just run amok in the last 8 years, and if we don't solve that crisis, Tom, we don't solve anything, any of these other issues. Health care, of course, is on the top of everybody's list as something has to be addressed. If we don't, it brings this country down economically in the long run. So these are the things that we're looking at. We're looking more for a style of leadership that will bring people together, that is, bring the left and the right together in the middle to find some compromise solutions on these issues. We haven't seen that in 8 years, and that's one of the things that we really like in Barack Obama. He's a uniter. He's a person who can bring people together, and so we want to focus more on that trait and characteristic rather than whether somebody's liberal or conservative.
Arianna Huffington, how about it? This is a big issue here in Denver. Can the Democratic Party go forward, win, and govern without regard to whether or not its members, its elected representatives, maybe its president in the White House, is liberal or conservative? Can it set that aside for a vision of unity and a kind of nonpartisan progress on the kind of issues the Congressman outlines?
Well, first of all, something very dramatic has happened to this country, which is that the center has shifted. And positions that used to be described as left-wing are now solidly mainstream on many, many important issues, starting with health care, with 60 to 70% majorities wanting some form of universal health care, global warming. We now have solid majorities recognizing that something needs to be done about global warming, corporate responsibility, wanting to bring the troops home from Iraq. All these positions used to be mindlessly characterized as left-wing, but in fact are shared by the majority of the American people, who in fact are progressive in terms of their positions on the issues. It's just that the media, unfortunately, continue to present everything in terms of right or left and missing really what has happened in the last few years.
Jack Beatty, should we drop the right or left talk? Paul Krugman in the New York Times says, you know, what we need now is partisanship. You know, there's been pushback against the Blue Dog Democrats by progressive, organized even to oppose their election or re-election to Congress. So which is it? Should the Democrats be pushing for that big center, that kind of unity across the aisle that Barack Obama talks about, or something else, something more partisan?
Well, clearly for electioneering purposes, the post-partisan idea is more sellable than any notion of sheer partisanship. And moreover, you can't govern that way. As the congressman well knows, solutions are found in the middle. And what we see in Barack Obama is a man by virtue of his identity, his biracial identity, is someone constitutionally given to the idea of unity, of bringing people together. And I think that's his emphasis. You know, this business of progressivism, its essence really was described by a 19th century British thinker as the use of government to hinder hindrances to liberty. Hinder hindrances, and you know, hindrances of poverty and condition and so on. And historically, progressivism arose in this country after the turn of the century in reaction to the corruption of the Gilded Age. And the essence of that corruption was signalized by Rutherford B. Hayes when he said, "We have a government of the corporation, by the corporation, and for the corporation." That's really what was at the root of Gilded Age corruption. And the answer the progressives had was twofold. One, political reform, Teddy Roosevelt's 1907 ban on corporate contributions to political candidates, and two, social reform, Teddy Roosevelt's 1912 call for national health insurance. Well, that was 1912. We're still calling for it today. And the reason, of course, is because the business influence on government and the influence of money on government has prevented it. So that, I think, is the progressive. Those who say we have a new Gilded Age think we're going to have a new progressive era, and they point to the kinds of inequalities and corruptions that were common then as common now, and they suggest, will history repeat itself? Well, it may, but it may not.
Senator Edward Kennedy at the podium last night spoke to that, to a common theme of the Obama campaign, hope, but hope for the many, he said.
For me, this is a season of hope. New hope for a justice and fair prosperity for the many, and not just for the few. New hope.
Arianna Huffington, I don't want to gild over this, though. I mean, it is very clear right under the covers the Democrats are having a real Donnybrook about where they ought to stand. You've got liberal progressives who are furious with Blue Dog Democrats, saying they stymied all kinds of change even after the 06 midterm elections when Democrats got their majority. They're furious on all kinds of fronts, from the war to domestic surveillance and right on down the line. You've got them out campaigning actively against Democratic contenders for Congress, saying we don't want this kind of majority. We want a real progressive majority, and we're willing to oppose Democrats to get it. I mean, we shouldn't short sell, Arianna, what's going on behind the scenes, not very far behind the scenes in the Democratic Party.
Well, first of all, Jack's historic explanation of what happened then and what it may be happening here, I think, is spot on and explains where the momentum and the passion behind progressive ideas is coming at the moment. In terms of the battle within the Democratic Party, it's also a battle for power. And unfortunately, the blue dog policies of equivocation, triangulation, not taking bold positions, have lost Democrats' elections in 2002 and 2004. In 2006, they won the majority by clearly standing for bringing the troops home, by clearly standing for progressive positions. Look at Sherrod Brown in Ohio, winning on clearly progressive positions in a state which is going to be critical in the 2008 race. So this is not about power versus idealism. This is about power. This is where the majority of the people are. This is undoubtedly a gilded age. We've seen its impact on housing. We've seen its impact in growing inequalities. And the public is ready to be led in that direction. Democrats need to lead if they want to win. If they don't want to win, if they want another surprise in 08, as they had in 04 and as they had in 02, then let them equivocate and triangulate again.
Congressman Boyd, how about it? Do Democrats need to go to the center to win? Can they be straight-up progressives and win? We've just got half a minute before the break, but how do you see it?
I think we have to go to the center. The Democratic Party is transforming itself, and you saw that in 06, and it's definitely moving more to the center because the Democrats that won are more centrist Democrats. The Dems won in 2006 for three reasons, Tom, to my notion. One is the war, which Ariana has talked about, but also the corruption issue. The Republicans with, you know, controlling all branches of government, you know. And the third thing was the fiscal irresponsibility of the last 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not one economic indicator that shows that we are better off than we were 8 years ago. And if you look into the future, with the direction we're heading now fiscally under this administration for the last 8 years, it is a wreck. And that's the major problem that the new president, whether it be Obama or McCain, has to deal with.
I'm Tom Asbrook, live from Denver in the Democratic National Convention. There's music very familiar at another time. The 1930 version of Happy Days Are Here Again, Ben Sullivan and the Crooners. It's a tune that became Franklin Delano Roosevelt's theme at the 1932 Democratic Convention in Chicago. We're talking here in Denver about progressive Democrats, conservative blue dog Democrats, and the struggle for the center of the Democratic Party. Who will set the agenda? Who will drive the bus? Here's FDR at that 1932 Democratic National Convention at the Chicago Stadium declaring,
I pledge myself to a new deal for the American people.
A new deal for the American people. That was then. This is now. You can join the conversation. Progressive Democrats, are you chomping at the bit to get the brass ring again, to set the course for American policy? Can you do it with conservative blue dogs on board? Blue dog Democrats, are you afraid progressives will take the party so far left that the country won't follow? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I'm joined at the Pepsi Center on the edge of downtown Denver, where all the action is here, by Congressman Alan Boyd, representing Florida's 2nd Congressional District, Tallahassee, and more there. Arianna Huffington is with us, nationally syndicated columnist. She is co-founder and editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post, and our own news analyst, Jack Beatty, is here. You can join us, 800-423-8255. Arianna Huffington, you heard the congressman say just before the break, if you don't go to the center, you can't win. The headline from your essay, June 30th, Memo to Obama, Moving to the Middle is for Losers. So which is it, Arianna?
Well, you know, we have to define our terms. The center has shifted. The center is progressive. So my point about moving to the middle is for losers is when Obama made these very strong anti-NAFTA remarks during the primary and then told Fortune magazine that that was overheated campaign rhetoric, or when he changed his mind on surveillance and wiretapping. I mean, these are moves to the middle, and the middle is for losers. It has been for losers again and again for Democrats. They only need to look at what happened to them in 2002 when Tom Daschle said, let's just go along with the president, vote for the war in Iraq, let's get this topic off the agenda and vote on the economy. Let's move to the middle, and they lost. The same thing happened in 2004 with Kerry triangulating and obfuscating, and they lost. So this is not a matter, again, of idealism and sticking to your guns no matter what happens electorally. This is finally a time for Democrats to wake up to what's happening to the country, what the longing in the country is, and be able to answer it and reflect it.
Congressman Boyd, you live in the Congress. You know it well. You live in a district. You know the American people you represent. Do you believe that this country's political center is now, as Arianna Huffington says, progressive? Is the center now progressive?
I don't think it's quite as far progressive or to the left as Ms. Huffington thinks it might be. I think one of the things we need to remember here is that the President of the United States still is sort of the key player in all this, and he's the guy who pulls all the strings in Washington, D.C., and if he doesn't want to cooperate and get things done in the right way, it becomes very difficult in Washington, D.C. I would take issue with the fact that the Blue Dogs have stymied progressive changes. We have tried to work with the progressives on many, many issues, including, and I'll rip some off, the alternative minimum tax we worked on. We worked with PAYGO, which is a very critical part of how we do fiscal responsibility and get back to some reasonable a policy in terms of
pay for spending as you legislate
fiscal issues. Mm-hmm. GI Bill, we work with them on that to try to figure out ways to pay for it. The budget, the farm bill, all those issues, we work regularly with the progressives on, the Blue Dogs do. What we have had no luck doing is working with the White House on these issues because they just won't work with us. We think that whatever, if Senator Obama now in the White House, if that were to happen, then we believe that we can work with him.
Do you think he's a progressive or a centrist?
I don't think there's any doubt that he's a progressive. But
Haven't you endorsed him?
He's a uniter. I've never endorsed it in the presidential race, Tom, and won't this time and won't any other times. But I've got my own race to run, and I'll continue to focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
But, we think we can work with him. We think he's a uniter. We've watched him, and it's our hope that we get that opportunity to work with him.
Jack Beattie, can the Democrats have it both ways, always? I mean, we're very willing to concede that politics have changed, attitudes have changed. It may not be quite as clear left-right as it was 15 years ago. On the other hand, I've heard you grind your teeth for years, Jack, about the way some of the things get kind of muddied here. Do the Democrats have to decide? You know the fury, Jack, of a lot of progressive Democrats about Blue Dog positions. The congressman says Blue Dogs haven't stymied progressives. Do you think progressive Democrats believe that, Jack?
Well, I think there's a real conflict there, and I think it comes, as the congressman has indicated, around this idea of PAYGO and the balanced budget. Now, this is a constraint on a very active government, as I think the congressman would concede. Barack Obama talks about investments in infrastructure, in education, in energy. And some of those investments, he's probably going to want. They're going to probably be unpaid for. That is, they're going to be, charged to the future. But of course, if they are productive and if they are real capital investments, as in infrastructure, that's justified. And I see a real conflict between the budget orthodoxy of the Blue Dogs and the expansionary impulse of a progressive president, especially in the context of the Bush deficits that he's left them. And, Bill Clinton, facing something similar, went in the direction of orthodoxy. He said the path to growth is to balance the budget first, and he put taxes up on the wealthy in order to do that. Barack Obama also wants to tax the wealthy, but not to retire the deficit, but rather to spend that money on investment and to give some of that money back in tax cuts to the rest of us. So I see a real conflict there between the budget orthodoxy of the Blue Dogs and the idea of expansion of the progressives.
Congressman, what about it? Obama's got
Tom,
a big agenda. Can
Tom,
he pay for it? Can
Tom,
he do PAYGO and have Barack Obama as president?
Yes. Tom, listen, we have been led to believe, the country has been led to believe in the last 8 years by the leadership of this country, that's the president and the Republican Congress, that we can have anything we want. we can go to war overseas. We can commit our troops there for 6 or 8 or 10 years or 100 years or whatever. You know, we can have farm bills. We can have new GI web GI benefit bills. We can have a prescription drug bill. We can have all that. We don't have to pay for any of it. Now, you and I and most American people know that that's not the real deal.
What about universal health care? What about the kind of education reforms Obama's talking about?
See,
what about the infrastructure?
We can never,
is he overpromising?
We can never have those things which all of us as Democrats believe in,
mm-hmm.
believe strongly. And that's what makes us all Democrats. We believe in health care and education, and we'd like to see the people of this country have a good education and have health care. We can never have those things until we get our fiscal house in order. And that's what we're preaching to the left. Now, listen, PAYGO is an interesting concept, one that is hated and despised by the far left and the far right.
And again, this
both.
Is if you want something, you've got to figure out how to pay for it, either by taxes or by other spending cuts.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a new program, you got to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a tax cut, mm-hmm. you've got to have some sort of corresponding spending cut someplace. The progressives, the left side, has disliked it in the past because it kept them from, you know,
programs
creating new programs.
Yep.
The right side disliked it because it kept them from doing their tax cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it was the Republicans that let PAYGO expire in 2002. Republican-controlled Congress and
mm-hmm.
the White House.
Mm-hmm.
PAYGO was a critical part of getting this government right back on its right on the right path in the 90s under President Clinton and then a Republican-led Congress,
mm-hmm.
and it worked well. Those are tools that we should use to get the fiscal house in order, and then we can go address these problems of health care and education and immigration and energy and all the things which we want to deal with.
But can it all be done? That's one big question on the table here in Denver as the Democrats meet. You could kind of hear it last night. Caroline Kennedy stepped on stage to pay tribute to two men who she said changed her life and the life of the country, Barack Obama and her uncle, Senator Edward Kennedy. And she spoke about Obama's impact on her.
I've never had someone inspire me the way people tell me my father inspired them. But I do now, Barack Obama.
And Michelle Obama, in her big speech last night, talking about the world as it should be. Feel the vision in that idea. She said that electing her husband president would say a lot to future generations.
This time, in this great country, where a girl from the south side of Chicago can go to college and law school, and the son of a single mother from Hawaii can go all the way to the White House, that we committed ourselves to building the world as it should be.
The world as it should be doesn't come free. I'm in Denver at the Democratic National Convention with Congressman Alan Boyd of Florida. Arianna Huffington is here, and Jack Beatty. Let's begin to turn to our listeners. Joni in Boston, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I'm calling Arianna. I'm a lifelong progressive Democrat. I have a master's degree in public policy. I've never been behind Barack Obama because, in contrast to the positions of Hillary Clinton, Obama, in my opinion, is not very progressive, and he never has been. She's the only one that's offering full universal health care. He's only mandating it for children. It doesn't bring the cost down, as the New York Times finally did an analysis of his plan. I don't know what took them so long after all of these months to say that, no, it doesn't lower the average premium for anybody. We are looking at the fact that there is somebody without experience with economically, or has any kind, says he was against the war in Iraq, but I'll bet my kitchen sink that if he was in the Senate to take the vote at that time, he would have voted along with Kennedy and Kerry and Edwards and everybody else who took the vote. But Hillary Clinton is the clear progressive candidate. The progressives shunned her. And I think that this is very tragic. I think it's tragic now. And the progressives never stepped in while Hillary Clinton was being treated in a misogynistic fashion by the media, by the Democratic Party, and by the
Joni, let us pick it up with Arianna Huffington. Arianna, how about it? Progressives have been mad as hornets with Nancy Pelosi. Would a President Obama have the same anger from the left?
Well, I do not use the terms right and left. I think they're obsolete. I think they...
Fine, from the progressive wing, if you will.
Mm-hmm. I think that the anger that was felt by progressives towards Hillary Clinton had a lot to do with the war. It wasn't just her vote for the war. It wasn't just her vote against authorizing the UN to continue diplomacy. It wasn't just the fact that she kept saying there should be no exit strategy. It was the fact that she never really came clean, and she never really said, as many other Democrats, including Joe Biden, said, that they were wrong on the war, that they did cast the wrong vote. So that was really what fueled progressive anger. On the domestic issues, the caller is right that Hillary Clinton's health care plan is more progressive. But, you know, compared to John McCain's health care plan, you know, Barack Obama's health care plan would be such a huge advance in this country that to be debating whether it's Obama or McCain on health care is really laughable.
Hmm. Joni, thank you for your call. Jack Beatty, what do you see in Obama? Do you see another Bill Clinton who famously triangulated very successfully at the polls, took the party to the center? Or do you see something different in this candidate who talks about some pretty progressive policy, but also talks about a lot about bridging the gap between Democrats and Republicans?
Yes, he does. And I think that you might well see someone like Bill Clinton, but with this difference. There's a new issue. I think the New York Times, the David Leonhardt's article in the New York Times magazine brought this out. In 1993, Bill Clinton was facing a budget crisis. The first President Bush had tried to deal with it, and it was really going to stop growth. Today, the deficit as a percentage of GDP is not nearly so high. So it's not really quite such an extreme problem there. The problem today is inequality. And that's the difference, I think, between the two candidates. Bill Clinton felt that a rising tide would lift all boats. He got the tide to rise. The boats did go up. But we've just been through a recovery in which the tide was rising, but the boats didn't go up. People weren't at the bottom and in the middle weren't gaining. They were, in fact, losing through the recovery. And I think Obama says, no, we have to address the problems of inequality and not just the problems of overspending. And if that means we have to spend more, well, it's justified in reducing inequality. That's why he wants to have tax cuts down below, tax cuts as a part of his program, but tax cuts that are not really paid for, because he thinks people, one way to deal with inequality is to give people more money to spend, let them have more of their own money. And I do think that's the difference between them. There's a different problem for Democrats to address.
Congressman Boyd, how about it? Will Blue Dog Democrats be on board with President Barack Obama, if we go there, if and when he tries to cut back on the inequality that's grown in this country, to give
the
tax cuts?
The devil's always in the details, mm-hmm. Tom. I agree with what a lot of Jack says, but I think there's some differences. The debt as a percentage of GDP compared to what it was in 1992 is higher, no doubt about that. The deficit. Structurally, we have structural deficits built into the future. If we don't make some major changes in our spending, either our spending laws now or our taxing laws, because pending retirement of the baby boomers, mm-hmm. as it relates to health, Medicare and Social Security, this country is about to face a mountain of red ink that will significantly change our economy and significantly change the quality of life that our children and grandchildren will see if we don't address these problems. This is right around the corner. It's not 20, 30, 40 years from now. It's just
people in your own party are saying, never mind, we've got issues right now. We're in a recession. We have needs.
It's just a few short years away, and that's the challenge that President Obama will face. And I believe that the man's very savvy, intelligent, knows how to put the right people around him. I believe he's a uniter. He'll work with the progressives. He'll work with the Blue Dogs. He'll work with the Republicans to get this problem solved. And so I'm optimistic.
All right, we've got it. Arianna Huffington, editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post, joining us in Denver. Arianna, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, live from Denver, Colorado, at the Democratic National Convention. We're in the Pepsi Center on the edge of downtown Denver, the big hall right behind us. We're tucked in here between, we're at the back of, what, CBS and CNN and Fox here. That great big jumbotron you may have seen last night going out in all directions, red, white, and blue, and swirling at every moment. Well, there it is, still swirling this morning, and soon the hall will fill up with today's action. It is quite a gathering here. High hopes, also, though, a kind of tension in the Democratic Party about what it would mean when and if they might have both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue. We're talking about progressive Democrats, conservative blue dog Democrats, and the struggle for the center of the Democratic Party. Who will set the agenda? Who will drive the bus? What about Obama? How do you see him? Would he be a progressive champion? Would he bring a little blue dog to the White House? Is this a fight for the soul of the party? Can Obama have his change and be a friend of the blue dogs? Here was Representative Jesse Jackson Jr. of Illinois whipping up the crowd on the convention floor last night.
I know what a great leader can do to help us build common ground. America, we need such a leader who can heal the wounds of the last 8 years, a leader who knows that what unites us is greater than what divides us. America, we need Barack Obama in the White House.
There's the big unifier theme on the floor of the hall last night, and plenty of applause for it as Jesse Jackson Jr. gave it. But there are real tensions in this party. We're talking about them. Congressman Alan Boyd has joined us. He represents Florida's 2nd Congressional District, including Tallahassee. For a decade now, he's been a leader of the Blue Dog Coalition, a group of 47 or so Democratic members of the House of Representatives who advocate fiscal responsibility in the federal budgeting process and some fairly conservative positions. We've been joined by our own news analyst, Jack Beatty, and right now, also from Denver, columnist for the Washington Post and senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, author of Sold Out, Reclaiming Faith and Politics After the Religious Right, E.J. Dionne joins us. E.J., thank you so much for being here.
Always good to be with you.
It's great to have you. You've been listening a bit, E.J. We're trying to get into this tension that is so evident here, but there's a little resistance to kind of surface it and fully talk about it. How do you see this kind of back and forth between blue dogs and some very upset progressives that's been going on for months and more now?
Well, I guess I don't see the division in exactly those terms, and I'm not sure the division is as great as many might think it is. First of all, President Bush did keep his half-keep his promise to unite us, not divide us. He united Democrats to an unprecedented degree. And I think whether people are moderate Democrats or moderate to conservative Democrats, all the way over to progressive Democrats, their critiques of the Bush years are often quite similar. Secondly, it's as if a lot of people have read Jack Beatty's great book on the 19th century capitalism. Even people who are fairly moderate or conservative in the party look at the current situation and say there are inequalities here, there is unfairness here, the economy isn't working the way it's supposed to if you think of a democratic capitalist economy as spreading the wealth and growth around with some degree of equality. And so I think when you looked at the 2006 election, on the one hand, the blue dog Democrats like Congressman Boyd can feel good because there was a considerable number of moderate Democrats added to the group in the House of Representatives in particular, but also in the Senate. But secondly, a lot of those moderates were actually quite populist in the way they ran for election. So I think it's a complicated picture in that the divisions of the 1990s, except on personal terms, when you were watching a little bit of this fighting between Clinton and the Clinton forces and the Obama forces, but I don't think divisions of the 1990s are going to be the divisions of the next 5 or 10 years.
E.J., speak to this case then, and I'm sure you know it. Northeastern Pennsylvania, you've got Representative Chris Carney. He was elected in 2006 with the backing of a lot of progressive bloggers over four-term Republican incumbent there and came into the Congress. Now those bloggers have turned against him. They are actively spending even on ads against him after he voted for the domestic surveillance legislation of President Bush. He's up against a millionaire Republican, Chris Hackett, and progressive bloggers are behind are not behind him at all. Glenn Greenwald, columnist at Salon Magazine, says, I would rather see a smaller majority but fewer blue dogs than a big majority with the blue dogs in charge. That's opposition within the Democratic Party to a Democrat with teeth in it, E.J.
Well, first of all, I'm not familiar enough with that case, but you're sure going to send me to do some research after this show. I mean, there are, you know, we can't talk about bloggers as one uniform monolithic group. That's a very, and you can't even talk about progressive bloggers that way. So I have no idea if you've got a small group there who feel very passionately about this issue versus a large community that's just cut him out. The surveillance bill in particular caused a lot of difficulty with some liberals for good reason. And they went after Barack Obama on that too, but it doesn't mean they're not supporting him for president.
Jack Beatty, you know Glenn Greenwald and his crew here and their degree of upset with Blue Dogs who just aren't championing the causes that they want to see championed in Congress.
There's no question about it, and as EJ said, some of their anger was directed to Obama. And now, is this going to be important? That is, are we actually going to see Democrats lose because of progressive abstention? I don't know. I don't think so. What I do think is that if Obama is elected, these conflicts will come more to the surface. That is, especially on the budget. I mean, I just think there's just no. The congressman has, I think, very articulately said why we need to get the budget deficit down, and I can imagine, and a progressive could just as voluminously say, here's why we need to increase spending, here's why we need investments, and so on. And I just do see an essential budgetary conflict right there that will come right up under a Democratic president.
I want to get Congressman Boyd on that, but let me go first to Savannah, Georgia, and Dustin. Dustin, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to mention that the money for these new progressive programs, such as national health care, is there. We're spending billions of dollars across seas, not just in Iraq, but all over the world, when we should be taking this funding and putting it in on ourselves. Instead of worrying about fixing democracy across the world, we need to fix our problems here.
Need to fix it here? Bring some of that spending home from abroad? Congressman, what do you say?
If we don't fix it here, Tom, we can't deal with any of these other problems abroad in the long run. So we have to get our own fiscal house in order. But I want to address the Glenn Greenwald Salon magazine quote. Mm-hmm. And I think this is Mr. Greenwald, and I don't know him personally, don't read much of
this. This is the columnist at Salon, yep.
But I can tell you that he is dead wrong, and he has a very, very short memory. Chris Carney, Blue Dog
first term congressman from Northeastern Pennsylvania.
From Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. He's one of those what I call he got here because of the corruption issue.
Mm-hmm.
The fellow that he beat had a bad scandal.
Mm-hmm.
But
first Democrat elected from his district since 1961. That's a long time.
Mr. Carney's predecessor voted to have Tom DeLay run the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Chris Carney voted to have Nancy Pelosi run the House of Representatives. And if nothing else, Glenn Greenwald should understand that and the difference that it makes in how we move this country forward. We have a pure wreck as a result of the 8 years of the Bush administration, along with Tom DeLay running the House of Representatives. And, you know, we changed that now. We've changed part of the formula anyway. We hadn't changed the White House part, but we hopefully will do that in the fall. So I think these kinds of bloggers and these kinds of writers are just wrong.
E.J. Dionne, we saw a former Republican Rep. Jim Leach at the podium at the Democratic Convention last night. Do you think that if there should be an Obama administration, can you really hold hands and work across these party lines? There's a lot of talk about politics changing, but have they really changed so much? I mean, you're either going to cut taxes this way or that or not at all. You're going to spend it on perhaps the war in Iraq or not on the war in Iraq. How far can the hand-holding vision of an Obama era go, EJ?
Well, first of all, Jim Leach is an extraordinary person. He was one of six House Republicans to vote against authorizing the war in Iraq. I could certainly imagine Jim Leach-style Republicans and Jim Leach himself working easily with an Obama administration. I think as we're talking about these divisions, one of the important things to note is how many moderate and certainly progressive Republicans have been leaving the party. In all of New England, for example, there is only one Republican left in Congress. New England used to be one Republican left in the House, And New England used to be sort of the base for moderate to progressive Republicanism. So
but
that's
they're gone, and they've been gone. Jim Leach is gone.
Right, and Jim Leach lost, exactly right, in the 2006 election. I think it's going to depend on the mood after the election. I think it is possible that if there are enhanced Democratic majorities in both houses, which seems more likely than not, that there will be some Republicans who look at this situation and say it'll be better for them, and not to say they're all selfish, maybe some of them will say it's better for the country to work some deals on these matters. Because on the spending issue, it's not just a straight choice that either you care about the deficit or you care about health care. With the deficit at the level that it is, it may not be necessary for a new president to say, we're going to slash right to the bone to get to a balanced budget next year. It's not going to happen that way. There clearly is a need for fiscal balance, but there's also a need to solve some of these outstanding problems. So that I think, yes, I'm a realist. I don't think anything is going to be easy in Washington for a while because the problems are so big. But I think the very size of the problems may create a slightly different political circumstance than, say, the circumstance that confronted President Clinton when he took over in 92. We were unhappy. We were grumbling, which helped lead to Clinton's election. But I don't think people sensed the country was in the same kind of problem, that it's in now. I think there's a much greater sense that we face really deep problems this time. That gives a new president, I think, more room to move.
Let's get a call from Perrysburg, New York, and Carol. Carol, you're on the air with us in Denver.
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Hi. What? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just what was said last about the we have really deep problems, this feeds into what I want to say. When I listened to Obama initially, and because of his mixed background, I was so thrilled and impressed, and I feel now he is capitulating a bit, signing the Pfizer bill, you know, et cetera. But my concern here is that we are an earth in jeopardy. We are a nation in terrible jeopardy now. We could go down because of the fiscal crises that are happening. And my original question when this call was answered was, when are we going to grow up? We have to, and I would ask the gentlemen who are speaking now, when are we going to see that we are one people on one planet, and there are a segment of people who make enormous amounts of money on war, and let me just throw this in. We all agree, and this is religiously across the boards in every culture, we all agree that treating people the way we want to be treated or not treating people the way we don't want to be treated is what we all accept and buy. It is called a universal ethic. And when is this country going to get back to that? And when Obama first spoke, he said, "Why I'm going to talk to the Iranians, for example." And then
and people were all over him for that. Carol, our time is short, but I appreciate your call very much. EJ, you hear what Carol's longing for. It echoes, in a way, some of what Michelle Obama said last night, a kind of golden rule approach. Here we are. It's day two of the Democratic Convention. Do you see the Democrats, EJ, opening up at this point in August, just 10 weeks or so to go before the election, opening up this election in a way that is effectively pushing them toward victory, if that's their goal, that kind of picture that Michelle Obama talked about that our caller Carol pointed about? Are they on track?
Yeah, I personally think they had a good night last night because they began a process of sort of achieving a number of imperatives I think they have here. First, she introduced herself and the Obama family in a way that I think a lot of swing voters, doubtful voters are going to say, I can relate to those folks. For goodness sake, she even liked the Brady Bunch as a TV show. You can't get Brady Bunch and ice cream on their first date.
There you go.
Corny but not unhelpful in political terms. Secondly, there was that great moment with Senator Kennedy that's worth noting. But thirdly, there's a slogan that's emerging out of this convention that I think we're going to hear more of. It's One Nation, and it's a Barack Obama's answer to John McCain's Country First. One Nation is actually an old British conservative slogan from the 19th century, and I think it's trying to take the sense of patriotism that everyone feels but taken in a particular direction. And to say that patriotism requires a sense of national unity, I think it's a pushback, a subtle pushback, both against the possibility of a campaign that tries to paint Obama as somehow exotic, to use that word that people are using. It's a pushback against the undercurrent of racial voting, but it's also a pushback against negative campaigning. And then you saw an attack on John McCain. One of the biggest priorities of the Obama campaign is to take the spotlight off him. It's been entirely on him in the month of August until John McCain couldn't answer that question about how many houses he owned. They need to make this a choice, not just a referendum on Obama.
E.J. Dionne with The Washington Post. Thank you so much for being with us today, E.J.
A great pleasure always. Thank you.
Congressman Boyd, One Nation. Can you have it? Can we have it nationally? Can you have it within the Democratic Party itself?
Well, no, and I'm not sure that's healthy. A good debate, and I think E.J. Dionne has explained this very well. The divide is not as great as many people would want it to be or make it out to be. It is all going to work out. We have a great model here in this country. The governmental model is just hard to beat. It's second to none around the world. The key in this thing is the president. I don't know who's going to win the election, whether it be Obama and McCain. It looks like it's very, very close around the country now. I know Florida is a toss-up, going to be obviously a huge battleground
your state.
But we do need in the White House a man who is a uniter. We haven't had that in 8 years, and that's a critical component. And again, I'm less concerned about left, right, liberal, conservative philosophy and all that I am about a person who can bring people together, because this country is a divided country. It's a strong two-party system. By the way, the Democrats won the U.S. House because Blue Dogs got elected and centrist Democrats got elected. So that's why I say the Democratic Party has moved more to the center. So you're going to have a president who can bring the left and the right, the liberals, conservatives, Democrats, and Republicans together and to solve these problems. And we can get that done.
Blue Dog leader, Congressman Alan Boyd of Florida, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. I enjoyed it.
Jack Beatty, sounds like if they win the White House, we may see a big battle royal on the other side right within this party. Time will tell. Thanks so much for being with us, Jack.
Thank you, Tom.
Live from Denver and the DNC, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.